And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show for this Friday. It's the 19th of December, 2025. It's 4 minutes past nine, and it being Friday, we have an excellent Friday panel to introduce to you very shortly. We want you involved in the conversation throughout the course of the morning, of course. 086 60 25 000, that is the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25 000. Feel free to call 07491 25 000, or if you prefer to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And as always, you can watch the programme on our YouTube channel, on your smart devices, your smart TV or your Fire Stick, Highland Radio Ireland. Just search Highland Radio on Facebook, and we're on X as well. So, who do we have with us today? Paddy Rooney is chair of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Paddy, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, guys.
It's great to see you. Councillor Declan Meehan, independent councillor in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. Good morning, Declan.
Good morning, folks.
And also we have Ben Harkin, chair of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal, and an author as well. Good morning to you, Ben.
Morning, Greg. Thanks very much for having me.
No, thank you so much for joining us. Well, just one of the big stories, it's kind of centric to one political party, but just interested in a quick runaround of your views in relation to it. And following the publication of the Jim Gavin report and the subsequent fallout over the party's omni-shambles presidential campaign, do you believe Micheál Martin can still maintain the authority to lead Fianna Fáil into the next electoral cycle? Or has the handling of the Gavin candidacy created an irreparable rift between the leadership and the parliamentary party? Ben, you seem like an obvious choice to kick this one off.
You might kick that around maybe first. Omni shambles would be the word for it. Listen, it was a real disaster of a presidential campaign. I suppose what I would compare it to is the Brian Lenehan presidential campaign, you know, where it fell apart in the last few days. You know, Charlie Haughey got through that, but I think he lasted about 6 months after that there. I suppose if I say, you know, the next election is a very long time away, a week's a long time in politics. We found that out on the campaign, you know, how quickly things change. Micheál Martin might be there, he might not. There could be a change in all the party leaders, you know, by the end of it, the way these things go. I think that Micheál Martin made a gamble with Jim Gavin, meeting him once and putting him forward. It was a big gamble and it didn't pay off. You know, he had, I suppose, the national election went very well, and this election was the process of it was a real disaster. And I think he's admitted that to the parliamentary party and the political side of things for himself. He's managed to maybe hold off the momentum against him by the report at Christmas break as well. If you're going to have a change in leader, you need someone to stand up as well and say they want to be the leader. And, you know, no one has stood up
well,
yet.
Well, that's happening. I mean, Jim O'Callaghan's not coming and spending evenings in Donegal and around the country for purely the good of his health, is he? I mean, that is already happening. People are the jockeying.
Yeah, it is. I suppose if you were going to try and replace Micheál Martin, or you're going to replace any political party leader, you know, you're going to do it when they're at their weakest. I think maybe Micheál Martin might have passed that in this sense, you know, in the fact he's kind of got through the end of it. The thing is, like, I remember Albert Reynolds said that sort of you'll skip over the big things and the little things will trip you up. This makes Micheál Martin more vulnerable to the little things now after this year. And I suppose Jim O'Callaghan's on tour and that he's getting ready. But again, it'll take him standing up. It'll take him gathering votes to have an old confidence.
Do you think, though, out of respect, they are hoping that rather than sort of maybe tarnish his dynasty, that they... And probably it's already happening that he will depart ways on his terms. Or do you think he genuinely thinks he's going to lead that party into the next election?
I would think so, because I think the minute you decide, you know, you think yourself you're not going to do it, I think a lot of power starts to go away from you. I think, you know, Micheál Martin has served for a very long time. I can't imagine, you know, like he could have, if he wanted to step away from active politics, he probably would have ran for presidential election, but he didn't. So I'd say that probably shows that he was planning staying on for a while longer.
He probably wouldn't agree to meet himself once.
It would have gone better, I think, if he ran.
I will come back to you, but is he a lame duck leader now?
I don't think so, because again, I think he's got over the worst of this. He's still there. He has the Christmas break to come back. So I don't think he is a lame duck leader anymore. Mm. I think there is there is a.
Well, you don't think Pat the Cope Gallagher and Senator Noel Blaney are going to come back after Christmas and go, ah, sure, look at. I'm full of turkey now. He's a mighty leader.
I think that, but that's political parties. You know, you're always going to have, you're never going to have anyone unanimous together. I think that Pat has made his disappointment clear. He listened to the members and Donegal, and he reflected their views in that meeting. But that's politics, you know. And I think that Neil Martin, he still has the numbers at the minute, but like I say, it can change very, very quickly.
What's your view
now.
As chair of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal? Do you have faith in Micheál Martin to lead the party and lead the party into the next election?
In terms of Micheál Martin's leadership, that's for the parliamentary party.
I'm asking your opinion.
I would say that Micheál Martin did a fantastic job with regards to the last national elections. And I think that you couldn't have confidence in how the process for picking a presidential candidate was decided. And Micheál Martin's admitted that. And I think it's good now that there's going to be changes. I think members in Donegal want to be more active in that process. And I think it's good that that will happen the next election.
Well, this is going to be a long hour of me asking you the same question. Do you have faith in Micheál Martin's leadership and to lead the party to the next general election, personally speaking?
His last general election was a success. I think if he's there the next election, it'll be a success again. I think that he's admitted his mistake.
So that's a yes then from you.
That's a yes.
Okay, good man.
I think he's made a mistake with the presidential election.
Why did I have to drag that out if you've got so much faith in him?
Well, I suppose it's just not really my place, to be talking about the leadership.
Of course it is.
You know, that's a parliamentary party thing. I wasn't elected by people of Donegal to decide, you know, to give my opinion on it. I'm here more as a commentator.
Well, there's a lot of people.
You
know, there's people in Donegal that weren't elected into their position that have lots to say as well. But anyway, listen, come here. I'll give you a wee break now. Declan Meehan, I suppose, you know, you're coming at from an independent perspective and you've got your own views. What are they?
Well, look at Greg. I mean, I don't think it's so much as water under the bridge as it is blood in the water. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when we go into the new year. I think that Fianna Fáil have been quite successful in trying to kick this down the road. But there's obviously elements within the party that aren't happy with Micheál Martin's judgment. And I think that the report stands over that per judgment. One sit down to decide on a candidate. And I mean, even aside from, what came out during the campaign. I mean, objectively speaking, he was a terrible candidate. He was a terrible media performer with no political experience, no media experience. So it's strange. But at the end of the day, this is a matter for Fianna Fáil. I think that the people of Donegal, unless they're Fianna Fáil diehards, don't care about this particular story. What they care about is Fianna Fáil's mishandling of a housing crisis.
Well, that's what I was going to say, but and I'll let you go into that, by the way, just in case you think I was jumping in there. He might be the leader of Fianna Fáil, but he's also the leader of the country. And if you are raising concerns or question marks about his handling of a selection of a president, presidential candidate, well then, what about his decisions in relation to our role in Europe? What about his decisions in relation to his influence in how we spend money to address housing? I'm not sure we can separate that. I'm not saying you were, but I do think everyone's got a bit of skin in this game. He is the leader of the country.
Yeah, look, and I agree with that. I suppose the point I'm trying to make is I don't think that this necessarily should be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I think that there's plenty of other reasons to suggest that Micheál Martin has per judgment in terms of how to run the country and in terms of how policies are enacted, particularly around housing, particularly around the defective concrete blocks issue in Donegal and other counties. And I think that they're more pressing issues than Jim Gavin's failed presidential campaign.
Yeah, indeed. I'll come back to you. Paddy, I suppose too, also to as someone who reflects on things sort of in a historical context as well, it'll be interesting if your comments, if it brings to mind, any other sort of controversies, stroke potential heaves in politics. So I'll just hand it over to you generally.
Yeah, I have a great degree of sympathy for Micheál Martin in the fact that he's actually taken the flak now for the sins of others. I think Ben and Declan have covered it fairly well, but One body of people that got no mention at all in the report, and that was the Sean Dorgan, the General Secretary of Fianna Fáil, and other officials. I mean, Sean Dorgan is on a very healthy six-figure salary here, and him and his full-time officials are responsible for finding candidates and for vetting them. I mean, I have a degree of sympathy for Micheál Martin and the fact that he's a Taoiseach and he's running the country, and even though the summer is a sort of a quiet time for politics, there's a lot of stuff going on in the European Union and a lot of stuff with the war in Gaza and Ukraine. And I can well imagine why his, you know, he would have been distracted over that. It wasn't his job, actually, to ring up Fionn Sheehan and the Irish Independent and to go and suss things out. But, of course, you're going to say to me, Greg, well, he's the leader of Fianna Fáil.
OK, well, let me do that then, because that'll be interesting. A former Dublin GAA footballer rang Jack Chambers and said, "Jim Gavin, this fella would be a good presidential candidate." Jim Gavin then had a conversation with Jack Chambers or someone else. That was brought to Micheál Martin. Micheál Martin had one meeting with Jim Gavin and determined at that meeting that this was the guy, and he threw in fully in behind him and he endorsed him. Then when it was coming to a parliamentary vote, Micheál Martin rang around people effectively to say, you know, back my candidate, this is Jim Gavin. Now, all the while, we had people like Pat the Cope Gallagher and other senior members of the party going, well, is no one going to ask us? Is no one going to see what we think? Is no one actually going to even see, are we interested in relation to this? The party as a whole just kept asking Jim Gavin the same question over and over again. And he says, no, I don't remember that. And all of the people that you talk of, and Jack Chambers and Micheál Martin and all of those, didn't think it worthwhile saying, right, here's a scab we need to scratch here. There's something going on. And it was only until the person that the money was owed to asked Jim Gavin about it that he says, oh, yes, I recall this now. So I don't see the distance Micheál Martin can put himself from this process that you talk of with respect, Paddy.
Well, I know, and these are probably Ben's lines, but I'm going to sing them anyway, Greg. If you read a lot of the stuff that's been written over the last week or 10 days about all this, the mood music seemed to be that Micheál Martin didn't want to have anything got to do with the presidential election in the first place. He would have been much happier, in fact, if Fianna Fáil had sat it out. And I think what upset the apple cart in the middle of the summer, believe it or not, was when Mairead McGuinness withdrew. And that changed the whole political landscape. And Micheál Martin has admitted to the fact that Fianna Fáil were doing polls. And any of the internal candidates, the Micheál, or, you know, the Mary Hannifers of this world and Eamon O'Keefe and people like that, they were polling very badly and they didn't want to go into the election, spend a lot of money on candidates that weren't going to win. And of course, he couldn't have Bertie Ahern there because of all of the stuff that was going to come up about Tom Gilmartin and Ray Burke and Liam Lawler, all that kind of stuff. That just couldn't be washed anymore. And I suppose, I don't know Micheál Martin, I haven't met him in 20 years, but I would suspect that they seen somebody from the outside and at a superficial level, he looked like the real deal here. But the people that should have vetted him now, that should have really carried out the forensic examination on this, didn't.
Okay.
Anyway, he's taken the flag for it now. But I think that Declan probably hit on a good point there because Malcolm O'Byrne, one of the TDs, made reference to the fact, now he's one of the 12 rebels here, and he said that this was as a sort of a signature or a sign of a malaise within the party, that the top table of Fianna Fáil and Sean Dorgan's outfit, the permanent officials, that there is a very strong level of disconnect between them and backbench TDs and the members on the ground. And I think this is a manifestation of it now. You know, Declan made the point that something else will pop up here and could topple the House of Cards. And
in your view,
Mark needs to attend to very, very quickly.
In your view, given the fact that potential replacements are doing tours around the county, you know, you've got very senior members of the party very negative towards Micheál Martin. Do you feel that he can ride this out, and if he wants to lead the party into the next general election, or do you believe now he might be strategizing how he departs off into the sunset and retains his legacy as it is?
Well, he will survive in the short term for a variety of reasons, and Ben articulated them very well. One of the big reasons is, I think Fianna Fáil is, somebody needs to help me out here, they've about 47 or 48 TDs. Let's leave the senators and the MEPs aside for a while. 20 of those TDs are actually invested. They're either ministers, junior ministers, chairs of committees or something. And at the moment, there hasn't been one of them has come out and issued a negative comment about Micheál Martin. So he sort of has those. But what'll he's been unlucky in a way in that Mairead McGuinness has dropped out. It's all what's happening in Fine Gael actually that's hampering him. He's been very unfortunate that Pascal Donoghue has gathered his marbles and gone, because now two by-elections and Fianna Fáil are going to lose both of those, and they're going to do badly in both of those, I suspect. Mm. And if they had another one, I mean, this is what brought Jack Lynch down. I remember saying on your programme before, it wasn't the turbulent times. He lost three by-elections on the bounce, three by-election losses, poor showing in the polls, and I don't think he'll be there by next Christmas.
Okay, we shall see. We'll be back with more from our guests and your comments as well after a quick break. We're in the company of Paddy Rooney, Ben Harkin, Councillor Declan Meehan. A caller says it doesn't matter who the leader of Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael is. They're all cowboys, they say. Jim O'Callaghan wasn't in Donegal to meet the locals. He was in Donegal to get support for his move to take over. We shall see. As Ireland becomes increasingly secular and diverse, do you believe the gradual reduction of traditional symbols like public nativity plays and the candle in the window represent a loss of cultural identity? Or is it a necessary and an inevitable evolution to ensure the holiday, Christmas, remains inclusive for all modern Irish citizens? I suppose I'm making presumptions in that question, Declan Meehan, that might not exist. Maybe we aren't seeing a reduction in traditional symbols. What's your view?
Yeah, I suppose, look, at I reject the premise of the question, essentially.
Kind of anticipated that. That's why I just had that escape plan just towards the end of the question.
Yeah, I think that I guess I don't see a reduction in those kind of traditional symbols or those traditional expressions of Christmas, our own kind of Irish Christmas experience and the Christian Christmas experience. I think that that's all still very well and good and very much alive. I mean, I was speaking to my mother yesterday, and she had been down to my niece's nativity play/mass in the Irish language down in Downing's the day before. I think that that's still quite commonplace across the country. I do think, though, that I suppose our kind of Irish expression of Christmas in some ways does necessarily become a bit more secular, but still rooted in the kind of Christian traditions of Christmas. And I don't think that that's anything to do with, I suppose, kind of multiculturalism as such. I think it's more to do with a growing irreligious or growing population that express themselves as non-religious. And we see that growth.
So
if
you think sort of what if we tracked attendance, sort of weekly attendance, and then maybe, you know, Christmas attendance at a mass, if we were tracking that, any reduction in sort of tradition perhaps might follow that quite closely, that people are just moving away from religion, and then what might come with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we had a presentation up at Donegal ATB just in relation to something else, and one of the kind of, I suppose, startling things about it was that 35% of marriages now don't take place within a religious venue. And that's up hugely from 10 years ago when, you know, around 10% of marriages took place outside of a religious venue. So I think it's kind of a trend of secularization and people moving away from church for various reasons.
I think it's an interesting conversation, because sometimes I can see it, if it's not happening already, it would try and be framed as some sort of an external influence. But yeah. I don't see anyone, or I haven't come across any groups or individuals that are trying to, you know, maybe sometimes people bend over backwards because they think it's the right thing to do to make things more inclusive. But I don't think there's any external Christian pressures to get rid of Christmas and tradition and what have you.
No, I don't think so, Greg, and certainly not. But often you do hear that kind of touted, I suppose, as a reason for it. And, you know, we've seen kind of movements from people in the UK and in the USA in particular, you know, oh, they want to cancel Christmas. And don't think there's any evidence of that. I mean, I've lived in Ireland all my life, and I've never once in those 36 and a half years been wished a happy holidays as opposed to a Merry Christmas.
No, and I think I might push back on that, because I'll tell you, and a little bit comes from it. There is one town whereby the crib goes up traditionally on the 8th or 9th of December, and someone had messaged in on the 5th saying, what's going on here? Why, you know what I mean? And the presumption was that it wasn't going up, but the reality was it hadn't come to the time when it normally is erected. Ben, as a younger person, although you're getting older every time I see you, but I suppose that's because time's passing, isn't it?
We're I'm all not looking too much older.
No, Greg, you're not, but we're all maturing, that's all I'm saying. You know, you're hanging on to Ogre there by the skin of your teeth. Carry on.
Yeah, just about. Yeah, I think, like, I don't know if this is in relation to anything that happened. I would agree. I don't think it is something.
I'll tell you what it is. I'll just to frame it, and I'm not cutting across you. It's just that you know what happens is you get people messaging in, and you hear conversations that you know. You don't see nativity plays as much. Now, of course, Dan, and I don't know if you did, but you don't see nativity plays as much. You don't see nativity cards as much. There is this sense, and people do have this conversation. So it's not necessarily to... I mean, this Declan's contribution is really healthy there to say, well, you know what?
Yeah.
That's not the case per se. It's just a perception.
Yeah, no, I think as well, like different things, like, for example, you chat about the sort of crib or displays like this year. Like, a lot of the time, they were arranged by people that were, in organisations around the church and sort of in local communities. And just because people maybe go to mass that less and they're less involved in these organisations, there's just not the same people to arrange these things. But I don't think that's because they're not trying to offend anyone. It's just because, like anything, arranging things takes work. It takes people to do it. I would hope, anyway, that with regards to if schools want to have nativities and that there, that they don't feel they should, you know, I know there are schools that are not religious, you know, we've educated together schools and they probably should have their own things. But I think that for schools particularly that were founded and paid for by Catholic organisations, that they wouldn't feel that they have to change. I think that there is a wide range of traditions in Ireland and a wide range of religions now. But I think that it's Irish people want to see their own sort of traditions. And I don't think there is anyone trying to chase that out. I think it is. That's overblown.
Yeah, and I think sometimes those that are doing it believe they're doing the right thing, but perhaps aren't consulting the various people they believe they're trying to please, for that matter. If I went on holidays to India, or I moved to India, for an example, I'd want to feel their culture and their spirit and engage in what they're doing. I wouldn't want them in any way to blunt it for me. I wouldn't feel included. I would feel, well, okay. Paddy, what's your views on this? And then we'll move on.
Yeah, I don't think it's the fact that the whole spirit of Christmas is lasting or whatever. I mean, I don't know what my two colleagues think of all this, but we don't send or receive the same number of Christmas cards, for instance, that we used to do 30 years ago or whatever. And there's little bits like that. It's a sort of a creep thing more so than anything else that is dampening a wee bit. But one of the things that's going to save Christmas, guys, is the commercial imperative of it, because there are a lot of companies, for instance, if you talk to anybody who owns a jeweler shop or whatever, I mean, I think that Christmas around the loan accounts for about 40 or 50% of their total sales throughout the year. All you have to do is go into the major chains and the big shops in the second week of September, and there it all starts. And that's taking place the world over. If you go into the big store in New York, in Macy's or Hamley's toy store in London around that time of the year, they're just completely transformed. And that's going to save it.
Are most of the people shopping on Christmas Eve men, or is that a myth? I seem to
whatever.
Be all I see is men when I'm at Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve.
I think that there has been certain changes, though, in this country, and that we're sort of self-amputating ourselves away from Christmas the way it used to be about 50 years ago or whatever. A lot of it's got to do with affluence, you know, with other things that remind. A lot of it has got to do with mass education. A lot of it has got to do with clerical abuse. And if people tiptoe away from the church, I think a lot of bits and bobs that go with it have been damaged a little bit as well. I mean, there is a forecast now that the population of this country is going to double in whatever number of years, right? But it's not going to double due to the birth rate. It's going to double due to the people that's going to come here from Eastern Europe and Africa, and those countries are predominantly not Christian. So we may end up in a situation way out here in the future when we have 10 million people here and 5 million of them are not Christian and have no, don't have any value.
Or of that 10 million...
Christmas Day in the month of
yeah, but of those 10 million, 8 million may have no practice of whatever religion Absolutely. They are, but will still put a Christmas tree up.
Yes, and of course, a lot of them will run a business and they'll want to be selling things. Mm. And they'll, you know, so instead of a spiritual, religious thing or a faith thing, it'll be turned into a commercial thing.
I mean, like, there are still people listening to this show that will freeze 4 or 5 loaf of breads at Christmas. They simply will, because this penny hasn't dropped at the shops, only closed for half an hour now, effectively. But that is the case, no doubt. All right, thanks for that. That's a quickie just. We'll be back with more from our guests after this break. Welcome back to the programme. We're in the company of Paddy Rooney, the Chair of Friends of Letty County University Hospital, Ben Harkin, Chairperson of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal, and an author, and Councillor Declan Meehan, Independent Councillor in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. Just chuck this one out, actually. I forgot to put it down as a heads up, but I think we all have views on it. Ben, I'll start with you. What's your views on the businesses, small businesses, and residential customers having to foot much of the bill for the upgrade of the electricity network, given the fact that I suppose 88% of demand over the last 7 years has come from data centres, and the fact that data centres as well take over 20% of power, the total power generation from the grid. At the same time, we're chucking away 1.3 million euro of green energy a day as well. And we have also, we're consistently the first or second in terms of the highest electricity prices. So, Ben, do you think it's fair to be tapping up regular folk again, with 300,000 of them in arrears, I should point out, for, you know, the development, the essential development of the electricity network?
I think it's very disappointing. You know, we've seen data centres come on that have been, you know, they're basically, you know, villages or towns worth of electricity. They're all gathered around the same location. They all want to be close to the airport. So they're all in around North Dublin, and that's required massive upgrades to the grid. I think that they are based in Ireland because they want to be in Ireland, because their sort of parent companies are based in Ireland, because it's easy to get to, and because the climate works. I think if they want to be in Ireland, they want to base their data centres in Ireland, then, you know, they should have to, you know, sub a lot of the bill for improving the grid. This is what it's been improved for. They've put the demand on it. They want to be here. They want to be in Ireland. It's not, you know, I think we want their companies there, but, you know, Google is always going to be based here anyway. They just want to get their data centres here. These companies are in, they have massive demand for locations to get data centres. You know, they're building them. I've seen they've kind of moved on there in Spain and stuff like that there. So they're going to take big bills to try and cool these things down in Spain and that. I think that, you know, we have a capacity for it, but they need to pay for it, I think, for the upgrades. We have the energy a lot along the West Coast, but they should be paying for the upgrades, and especially upgrades in North Dublin, which is posing an issue when all of these are running at the peak
But we've
times.
Got to the point where we're being told that we are going to pay for it or pay for much of it. So obviously the regulator AirGrid or the government don't believe that what you're saying is true.
Yeah, and I think it's probably part of the balancing act of, you know, trying to keep this sort of massive corporations happy. You know, corporate tax is an important part of our windfall each year. But like I say, these companies are mad to get places to get data centres. You know, they don't have a huge amount of places to put them. They're mad to get them in. I think that if we, you know, if we put a bill on them, if we put, say, a stipend on them, I think that that's fair enough. I think people are paying more than enough through their bill without putting, you know, an extra charge on top. But they want to be based in Ireland, I think, you know, so I think that they should do it, and I think they would be happy enough if they got their data centre built.
All right, Declan, you're at the coalface of hearing of the reality of living in this country, whereby you can be unemployed or working and still having to go to St. Vincent de Paul for supports behind in electricity, and then you're being told to upgrade the network, you're going to have to foot that bill as well. Does it seem fair to you?
No, I mean, it doesn't seem fair at all. And I don't think anyone listening to this show would agree with what is planned. We have a huge problem in Ireland with reckoning with international companies and making them pay their fair share. But what I will also say is not only is this on these data centres to contribute fairly to the cost of upgrading the grid, it's also up to the electricity providers who have been profiting hugely over the past number of years.
Why are they so insulated and untouchable, Declan? the power companies?
They seem to be. And I mean, that's up to, I suppose, an action from the government to actually tackle that. I mean, I'll give you an example, right? I'm dealing with people genuinely on a weekly basis who have to choose between paying bills and putting food on the table. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but that is the reality this year more than in previous years. And that is in large part, I suppose, due to the lack of support from government around energy bills this year, that decision that was made. I mean, like, now to say that the standing charge is going to go up and that our contribution is going to have to go up, and we know already that hundreds of thousands of people are in arrears, it's completely unfair. And I do believe that the government needs to look at this, and not just in relation to the upgrading of the grid, which is long, long overdue. As you said, Greg, in your introduction there, that we're losing energy because the grid isn't capable of taking the renewable sources on a daily basis. Not just in relation to upgrading the grid, but the government also needs to look at, in conjunction with the regulator, how they look at this price gouging that is going on from electricity providers. And it is price gouging. Another example I'll give you is someone on prepay power. Prepay power is an option for people who can't afford or don't want to run up a big bill. And yet the standing charge is higher for prepay power. Also, the service charge is an additional daily charge on top of that. So electricity is much more expensive for people who can't afford regular electricity charges. The system for electricity and for energy providers in Ireland is severely dysfunctional. Yeah,
I know, but they're probably, I mentioned this because it frustrates me, but they're following the lead of the state. If you are short on cash and you tax your car 3 months at a time, the state takes more money off you than it does if you tax it for 6 months or for a year. Yeah. And it's now all digital. No one touches a sheet of paper. It literally is just ripping off those who are perhaps less able to pay. So I suppose the electricity companies might come on, and that's only one example I'm giving there, and say, well, sure, the state's at it. Why don't we do it?
Yeah, and look, that's an incredibly unfair system. And the reality, Greg, is that poverty is very expensive, and that's the reality, because there's an awful lot of people who are disadvantaged. There's an awful lot of people this Christmas who are living in poverty that weren't last Christmas, and that number is unfortunately increasing, particularly in households with children and people living alone. I mean, look at even the cost of rent has doubled in the past 10 years, and yet the housing assistance payment has not increased by one penny in that same decade. Mm. So, I mean, people are up against it every which way they turn. And this is the latest kind of, I suppose, slap in the face, where people who are already in arrears with electricity are facing price hikes yet again.
And I'm not sure if it's relevant or not, but just as I was listening to, I do know healthy food is more expensive as well, which factors into people's health as well. Paddy, what's your view in relation to this? I mean, I suppose, obviously, we can be very... It's obvious to say, oh, well, look, electricity companies could pay it or whatever. I mean, do you think it is as simple as that we shouldn't have to pay it, or is it more complex?
Well, I was driving the car one day and I happened to come upon an interview. I can't remember the name of the person, but they were representing Sir Vincent de Paul in any case, and they were talking about electricity bills now is the number one ticket item that they're being asked to respond to around this time, which is, I suppose, a shocking indictment of the system. I think the last time Ben and I were on your program together, we were talking about the cost of energy. And I think you yourself, Greg, made the point that energy in Ireland seems to be more expensive than a lot of our European partners for some unexplained reason. And I accept the fact if there's going to be an upgrade of the grid in Ireland, somebody's got to pay for it, because we don't have enough power. It's the very same as we don't have enough Ishka air and don't have enough water, and somebody's going to have to pay for the expansion too, because there's going to be houses at the end of this summer. But as a starting point, I would love whatever government minister is responsible for energy and power and business in this country is to sit down with whoever in the ESB or whoever owns the grid and explain to us, Declan made reference to price gouging, explain to us very clearly, and for the minister to come out and tell us, what is the big secret here?
Well, the ESRI were before a public accounts committee last week, and they were unable to say, they literally said this, why electricity prices are so high here.
Well, I find that completely unacceptable, yeah. Then. I mean, government departments and the government ministers so weak and ineffective that they can't haul somebody in here that they're elected to speak in our behalf to come and to get to the bottom of this and tell us? I mean, I'm prepared to expect the good, the bad and the indifferent if I know why. I don't know why at the moment, and that's what really frustrates me, and it frustrates me that there are so many people in the country, because you need power.
But there must be another motivation factor, Paddy, because the whole idea of this corporation tax was that, you know, you don't rely on it for day-to-day spending, but, you know, it's good to spend on infrastructural development. Where is all of this money, and why is that not being... There must be something else going on, right? That the electricity companies can make as much profit as they like, and that the public are being asked to build the network for them to make that money. Long-term investment, this is good stuff we should be able to spend this windfall money on, but it's the customer, again, that's being asked to foot the bill when the government themselves know that they can't afford to pay their bills because they know the stats, 300,000 people in arrears, and God knows how many others are just on the brink.
Well, that's a very good point, Greg, because, you know, the windfall taxes that are falling down out of the sky is 10 billion euro per month is coming in at this particular time. People are always bleating away about the cost of the National Children's Hospital in Dublin. Well, there's so much corporation tax coming in at the moment that you can build four of these children's hospital every month for a year, right? So that's putting things into perspective here. And we're talking about houses you can't build.
Four of them a month, sorry. It's because it's so ridiculous. You could build 48 of them a year.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And, you know, that we can't. That's why I would love an explanation for this. I mean, the four of us are going round and round in circles here because we don't know all the facts here. And I would like to know is, what is the big secret and who is hiding the thing? Tell us, and then let us come to an informed decision about it.
Mm. Declan, did you want to come back?
I think also one of the big issues here is that, you know, we have, you know, the regulator, but obviously we used to have essentially a semi-state provider as a sole provider of electricity, and that allowed prices to be more, I suppose, to keep prices lower.
No, because if you open prices up the market, competition drives the prices down, Declan. Don't be silly.
Yeah, exactly. That's the theory, isn't it? But I tell you what, follow the money on this one. See who's lobbying who. Why is government so ineffective on all of this? It just beggars belief. I just can't, like, it's just, why do we have one of the most expensive electricity charges in the European
Ben,
Union?
You've written about this. Why?
So fundamentally, because the price is set by the price of gas, we're at the end of, you know, the gas then effectively.
No. Well, what about Malta? Malta,
well,
hold on a second. Whoa. This isn't. Sorry about this, right?
As well, I just
But before you do, on that point, we aren't the only outliers. There's islands and outliers on the end of the line across Europe. So there, I could give Malta's one for an example. Cyprus, the other, is it? There's other countries that are equally as far on the end as us. So I dispute that, Ben. Next.
So where our prices really shot up against, you know, other countries in Europe was around COVID. And what happened there was that the companies, basically the suppliers, made really bad hedges with regards to the price of gas. Now, that explained why they went up, why they are still so far up when those hedging contracts have gone on.
Yeah, but that's to retain their profits. They could say, okay, we made a mistake. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to take a hit in our profits. But they're not. They're saying, if that is what you say is the case, they're saying, all right, we made a mistake, and the Egypts and Ireland are going to pay for it.
Well, like that is what shot it up. Anyways, then bad hedging contracts at the time. Again,
when do they expire?
They've expired now. Like they're over now. Right. But again, I think that was a good idea by Paddy, that, you know, we should have an idea as to these companies as to why. Like, are these contracts still going on, and are they just sort of letting Ireland foot the bill or something? I think the fact that the ERSI it's their job to understand why they're so expensive. I think it would be a good idea if they could look into this.
No, they don't know. They don't know. They said, I don't think I'm misquoting them. I'll double check the quote during this next break. But my understanding is they couldn't explain it, Declan.
They said they don't know. I don't think that's good enough.
Ultimately, the SRA is a think tank, essentially. And I think that if our own government can't tell us why electricity is so expensive, then that's a failing of government and the government minister and department. It is kind of ridiculous to have to rely on external people to tell us why electricity is more expensive. The state should have that knowledge to hand and should be able to do something about it.
Right, back with more after the break. Does this week's 124-24 Dáil vote against the fox hunting ban represent a protection of rural tradition, as some would have us believe, or a failure to align with Irish law, our Irish law, with modern animal welfare standards and the general wish of the people, both in urban and rural Ireland? Paddy, I'll start with you in this one. I mean, there's no place for having it in this day and age, is the dogs ripping an animal to pieces.
Oh, absolutely. And like, it's the perverse way that we do politics in this country. And I suspect that the reason why the bill was shot down was because it came from one of the smaller parties, Ruth Cottinger, the representative from People Before Profit. I mean, if some of one of the three bigger parties had been sponsoring this bill, I'm sure it would have got through. Martin Hayden, the Minister for Agriculture, was one of the main cheerleaders in trying to get this put down. And some of the arguments that he was put forward were just, it's the kind of stuff you would hear in a schoolyard. He castigated Jennifer Whitmore of the Social Democrats in particular because he said some of the people in this house are supporting this bill and they've never been to a fox hunt or they've never even saw one. And he made some kind of thing about the fox hunting now that it's regulated and that there are values in it and that it's insurance covered by all of this kind of stuff. And it just, and then, you know, people then like Martin Kenny of Sinn Féin talking about that this is a long-term rural tradition. Well, hanging used to be legal in this country and execution used to be.
I just find it strange that Sinn Féin had come to defence of an activity that was introduced during colonial times by the British.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the exact words that was used by Jed Nash of the Labour Party. They were supporting Ruth Cottinger here, that this was a hangover for imperialistic days and so on. I mean, it's just really dreadful.
What's your view? Is there any place in modern society for fox hunting?
No, there isn't. Absolutely not. And just to be clear for your listeners, Greg, this bill would not have prevented people from shooting foxes.
No.
This is about organised fox hunting. They're torn apart as well as baiting and trapping.
Are you surprised, so, given Justin and Tease's into your argument, that with this new alliance of the left that Sinn Féin didn't sort of look at this in a little bit more detail?
I think it's very disappointing that Sinn Féin didn't back it. I think that Patrick or Paddy has covered a lot there that's very, very good in terms of setting the context. I think it's very important to point out that in Donegal, one TD, Charlie Ward, voted in support of the private members bill and our other four TDs voted against it. And I think that just beggars belief. And also, I think what's really important to point out is that in two polls conducted in the past 6 weeks or so, 73% and 77% respectively actually support a ban on fox hunting.
Rural and urban.
So this is popular both rurally and in urban settings. And I just think that it's ridiculous in particular, not just look at Sinn Féin as a Republican party, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael also claim to have Republican credentials. So it's ridiculous. But also it boils down simply to an animal welfare issue as opposed to a class-based or a post-colonial one. And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
Ben, what do you think in a minute?
Fox hunting isn't something that I have any interest in. It's not anything that I would be interested in getting in. I think that the fact that there is so much opposition to this bill, I think comes down to the third line in the bill where you cannot trap a fox to kill it. And that's been said sort of outside of the idea of hunting it. And I think that might have been the aspect that put Sinn Féin against it.
I'm not sure in terms of mink or foxes or other things that can affect livestock that anyone's using.
They could
trap.
Have amended the bill if that was their issue with it.
I mean, the three main political parties, Ben, that voted against that bill, they didn't put down one amendment to it.
No.
They just wanted to chop it off, period. Mm. And I would love to know the amount or the value of lobbying that went on behind the scenes. or was it just purely the fact that it came from people before profit, therefore it was bad news?
Right.
I don't know what aspect of lobbying would come from Fox. I think it just, the argument that it's because it's a colonial thing, I think that for whatever aspect of Fox, that's a bad argument.
No, like I don't think it was an argument. I just thought it's more ironic than an argument for voting against it. Ben Harkin, thank you so very much indeed. Always appreciate you coming on. Ben Harkin, chair of Ógrafina Fáil in Donegal, and an author. Check him out Paddy Rooney, pleasure as always. Thanks so very much indeed. And last but not least, Declan Meehan. Look after yourself, Declan. Have a great weekend.
Christmas.
And see you too. Merry Christmas. Right. We'll be back with more and loads of your comments after the news.